And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton and the community via the FM dial, as well as to the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. As I promised, we do have Eve Engler with us. Eve Engler, prolific writer, author, journalist, activist. He's involved in many causes related to Canadian foreign policy. He is the author of the Black Book of... What's the title of the book there, Eve?
The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy.
That's very straightforward. The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. Just like what it sounds like, I recommend you pick up a copy if you haven't already. He is the co-author, along with Anthony Fenton, of Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority. And he wrote Canada and Israel, Building Apartheid. Eve, thanks again for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
I just wanted to catch our listeners up on what's been happening in Haiti. There's been so much going on in the world with regard to Libya, the uprisings in Tunisia and Egypt, the repression of the demonstrations in Bahrain, the earthquakes and so forth, that people have been missing events that would be normally receiving a lot of coverage over Haiti. There is a process of elections happening right now, and I understand there are even United States troops that have landed that have become present. Is it true then that the U.S. troops are there, they said, to protect people or to uphold the results of this election?
Yeah, well, that's what, there was just election results announced on Tuesday, and there was also a deployment of a couple hundred American troops, what, according to the Miami Herald reporting on, to, you know, protect the embassy and to protect American interests. That's obviously on top of the 13,000 foreign troops that are in Haiti under the UN occupation force. So I think that... Do they have to get the okay of the Haitian government to send the troops, or do the Americans can just send troops to Haiti whenever they want? This is, you know, a continuation of a long-standing policy of disregard for Haitian sovereignty, and I think also in terms of always exaggerating the danger of situations, and there's a sort of constant echo that there's, you know, there's the mob in Haiti is going to cause trouble, and it's necessary that the foreign troops deploy to the country, and this is just one more instance in the long history of that.
Well, that seems to be related to something we've been hearing. I know in the case of Canada, it seems like anyone who's part of a certain club can send troops to Haiti. We sent some soldiers to Haiti to protect them, was it from the results of the earthquake, or they said that they wanted soldiers to be there because of what they thought might happen after the earthquake?
Yeah, so, you know, 15 months ago now, the terrible earthquake that left a couple hundred thousand people dead, I think the vast majority of Canadians, you know, in the initial hours and days after the earthquake were, you know, concerned that people get water, that people, get buried alive, get uncovered, and, you know, family members and whatnot get notified from people who were worried. The decision makers in Ottawa, as just recently uncovered by Canadian press, and this is something that people in the Canada Haiti Action Network have been saying since the time, but Canadian press, through access to information, found out that, in fact, what Ottawa was concerned about and the reason Canada sent 2,000 troops to Haiti after the earthquake was because they were scared there was going to be a popular revolt, and specifically that Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the ousted president, was going to return in the context of a political vacuum created by the earthquake. So again, while Canadians, were organizing telethons and donating money, and I think there was this real genuine outpouring of a combination of solidarity and sympathy for what Haitians had gone through with the earthquake, the decision makers in Ottawa were thinking about how to control the situation politically and thinking about militarizing, and that's what the Americans sent towards 20,000 troops. Canada sent 2,000 troops, and there was real disregard for what was needed. Right, and Canada didn't send the heavy urban search and rescue teams, which were designed to help people out, get people out of rubble and whatnot. Canada didn't send those heavy search and rescue teams after the earthquake explicitly because we prioritized troops, the militarization, and. This is, I think it just really speaks to sort of, again, how inhumane Canadian foreign policy is on one level, and also just how colonial the attitude is in Ottawa vis-a-vis Haiti. And they really see that it's our responsibility to, you know, we run the place kind of attitude.
Well, it's really incredible that Aristide, the return of President Aristide, seems to have galvanized some of these powers, Canada, the United States, to take action. So Canada sent troops because it was worried that Haitians would become very excited or excitable upon Aristide's return. And now we're in a situation where Aristide has been returning. I mean, how was he received upon arriving in Haiti?
Well, it was, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of people that greeted him at the airport, and despite the best efforts of the Americans, particularly Barack Obama, made two phone calls to South African president to ask to not allow Aristide to return. Aristide was exiled in South Africa, and Barack Obama took time out of his busy schedule to try to block Aristide's return the last couple of days. But the reaction among the majority poor was the reaction that everybody who's been paying attention to the situation in Haiti for a long time knows, which is that Aristide is still by far the most popular politician in the country. And, thousands, tens of thousands of people both descended on the airports to greet him and then traveled the whole way, miles and miles from the airport to his home in Tabar and stayed for, you know, the whole afternoon. So that was largely, I mean, it was reported on to a certain extent in Canada, the Canadian media, but the depth of the welcome and the level of people cleaning up the city as a part of the welcoming, you know, and then additionally the role that Canada played in overthrowing Aristide, but that was really left out of the dominant media story.
Well, it seemed to have been a happy and non-violent response. And you talk about the attitude Canada and the United States have towards Haitian politics, towards their leadership. I know that there had been comments from U.S. politicians saying things like it would be not helpful for Aristide to return at this time, you know, as if they get to make that judgment there. But, so he's back now. There isn't an electoral process happening. Again, Duvalier is there as well. So when you say CBC coverage, I'm reminded that a few days ago I heard a CBC report on the radio. They said President Aristide is coming back after having fled the country in a U.S. military jet. Now, that's not exactly what happened, was it?
No, I mean, there's a certain component of explanation there, but the role that the U.S. and Canada and France played in destabilizing the Aristide government, supporting this rebellion of a couple hundred former military that provided the pretext for the American military to go in and to, in Aristide's words, kidnap him, and of course with Canadian troops involved at the airport.
And of course, you cover that all in your book with Anthony Fenton, Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority, which I encourage people to pick up once again. But I bring that up because this issue, you know, these facts have been brought to public attention. They're out there. The CBC and other publications have been challenged on this kind of reporting. But it seems, you know, you step back for a few minutes and all of a sudden the reporting comes back that he fled the country or was pushed out by a revolt or something. So if you're not taking reporters to task, they seem to be going back to the same kind of narrative.
No, for sure. I mean, one of the great sort of omissions of Canadian foreign policy media coverage over the past 7 years is the fact that we know that 13 months before Aristide was overthrown, there was a meeting called by the Chrétien government that invited high-level officials from the Bush administration, invited a minister from the French government, Canadian minister for La Francophonie, Denis Paradis, was responsible for this meeting. They decided, as was reported on by L'Actualité, which is Quebec's equivalent to Maclean's, it was reported on in March 15th of 2003, they decided this meeting that Aristide had to go, that Haiti should be put under UN trusteeship, and the Haitian army should be recreated. 13 months later, that all happened. Since that time, since the coup in Haiti, since that all came to fruition, what was planned just outside Ottawa in this Canadian organized meeting, that the discussion of those meetings, I think, has been reported on in the dominant media twice, both in La Presse and for very particular reasons. So all of the Canadian media, which is, this is on the public record, it's out there publicly, has just simply ignored the fact that Canada was involved in organizing and more specifically consolidating the international forces that would overthrow Haiti's popular elected president And, you know, the Canadian media just doesn't see fit to report on that. And that's part of the reason why they can make these, you know, absurd claims that Aristide just, you know, fled on an American airplane.
I guess as we close off, we should look at the election and get some interesting commentary on that, because certainly we're only getting segments, bits and pieces. I can't figure out what's going on just from reading the regular news reports. You have reporting of two candidates, and someone let slip a mention that they may not necessarily represent all of Haitian popular opinion between them. Is Lavalas directly running in this election?
No, Fami Lavalas, the political party of Aristide, was banned, was not allowed, has not been allowed to participate in elections in Haiti since Aristide was overthrown.
So this is,
Once again,
because last time I spoke with you, and I spoke with Kevin Skerritt, and I spoke with Jean Saint-Ville, it may only be separated by 4 weeks or 4 months, but it sounds like we go through 4 years every time, because there's another election happening, and Lavalas, the most popular party in Haiti, is banned.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, there's been, I think, probably four or five elections now since the coup, you know, all of them a very dubious form, because the most popular political party, the party that over the past 20 years, I guess, that whenever they've been allowed to run in elections, they win overwhelmingly, they were blocked from participating. Now, what you have that just took place, I guess it's about 10 days ago now, 2 weeks ago, the ballots were just announced yesterday, is the fact that there were two candidates, Martelly and Maniga, both who represent the right wing in Haiti. There is less than 25% voting. The exact number is not clear, but probably something around 20% of the population voted, which Fami Lavalas was calling for a boycott. That's what happened. These are completely illegitimate elections. They're elections that Haitian media like IT Ponte and IT Liberté refer to as the international community, meaning the U.S., France, and Canada, elections that they've imposed on Haiti, and that their form of democracy, which is a form of democracy that excludes the majority poor. And both of the candidates, both of the candidates have as part of their political platform the recreation of the Haitian army. That's the Haitian army that was created when Americans invaded in 1915, occupied between 1915 and 1934, as the Haitian army that never once fought a foreign power, only was used to repress the domestic population. Both Maniga and Martelly, who won, they both said that they plan to recreate the Haitian army. That was an army that Aristide disbanded in 1995, because it had just been a tool of repression against the majority poor, a tool of the elite, a tool of the foreign powers, you know, often called the American Army in Haiti. So that is the most disturbing sort of development, I think, that Martelly represents. And that's because the poor majority have been excluded from the political process.
And hopefully everyone is familiar with the record of the Duvalier regime and those military units that are being reformed. Both candidates, they had a right-wing agenda. Some of them were using public relations firms that John McCain and members of the Republican Party were using. So even mainstream reporting couldn't hide the fact that these candidates are not necessarily representative of the majority of Haitians. I'm glad you're able to give us some detail. It looks like we're going to have to follow up, given that people are talking about putting those types of military units together and the elections continue to be this unrepresentative. I think that bodes very ill, unfortunately, for Haiti's future, and we're going to have to check in on that. So, Eve, thanks so much for giving your time today. This was a very exciting interview, news bit from you as well.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Wonderful,
Eve. Good work.
And we'll check in, and I'll mention your book. So thanks very much, Eve, and we'll catch you in a few weeks, most likely.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. That was Eve Engler, author of Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority. Wrote that along with Anthony Fenton, also writer of the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. He's the go-to person on what our government is doing abroad, especially in cases such as Haiti.